Hey, welcome back to When the Call Hits Home. I'm Jennifer Woosley, licensed professional clinical counselor and the kid of a first responder.
And my name is Ashley Gessner. I'm a licensed clinical social worker, also a child of a first responder. And today we have a special guest on. Her name is Caitlin. So one thing that I do have to share before we even start questioning her and getting her story is that Caitlin actually is a reason that this is happening. So about a year ago, I actually saw it pop up on my Facebook, which is really exciting. I put a status out there for all children of first responders. And I was like, what do I do? Because I know I want to do something, but what do I do? And I had all these questions, and Caitlin was so kind to take the time to reach out to me and have a conversation with me and bounce ideas off of each other and things like that. So without Caitlin, I don't know that we'd be here. So I got to give her,
Thank you,
oh my gosh, I
Caitlin.
didn't
Thank
even
you.
know
Yeah,
that.
thank you.
Right? I got to give
I
her
get
a
to
ton
be here
of
because of
credit.
Caitlin.
Oh, awesome.
Yes.
I got to give a ton of credit. And so we are so excited to finally have her on and to learn from her and learn her story. And I'm going to hand it over to you, Caitlin. So go ahead and introduce yourself and just let us know about you.
All right. Well, my name is Caitlin. I am the daughter of a first responder. My dad was a police officer growing up, and I'm also the sister to a police commander.
Wow.
And I'm also the sister to a firefighter paramedic, and I'm the niece to a police officer. So I have a whole slew of first responders in my family, and still to this day, still dealing with the effects of, unfortunately, positive and negative effects of being, a family member to first responders. It has definitely changed over the years. Yeah, so
Well, I
that's kind of
appreciate that
yeah.
introduction and getting to know. And it sounds like just a family of first responders with being even a niece, you
Yes.
know,
Yes.
that's just in the bloodline a little bit.
Yeah.
So just tell us a little bit what that was like growing up with a first responder as a parent.
Well, honestly, I want to say it shaped every aspect of who I am today in some way or another. So, right now, let me preface this. I'm married to somebody who is a marketing director for Culligan. So, he has a desk job. So, I grew up and, my dad was working nights or, he did his best to be present, but I feel like there's so many aspects of his job and it ended up affecting like the dynamic of our family. My parents ended up getting divorced when I was four. And I think a lot of that is attributed to the stress of the job. My dad was in his prime as a police officer in the 80s and 90s, and then retired in 2011 from the Hanover Park Police Department. And he would used to take us on ride-alongs all the time. And I want to say since I was 5 years old, we started going on ride-alongs with him every other year. My brothers and I have two brothers. We would alternate and stuff. So it's different being married to somebody who, stays in the same place. And you don't have it's not like a life and death situation. So like I watched my own dynamic of my own family being like, oh, I'm so thankful that I don't have to worry about my husband going off working nights or and the stigma that's out there today. Whereas when I was growing up, it was just kind of like, okay, I hope my dad comes home tonight. Or I would hear all these stories that he would tell us growing up, and I couldn't believe it. Like, I was just, what did you say? Like, what happened? So that really shaped my interest in criminal justice. And, we were raised, you respect law enforcement. Like, that's it. There's no black and white. It's you respect law enforcement. So for me growing up, I guess I was so naive to think that, because I only had positive experiences with law enforcement, I guess, because every time I would go on ride-alongs with my dad, he really worked closely with the Latin Kings, and they're very prevalent in Hanover Park. And I mean, he did a lot of community outreach. He did policing on the bike. He took me to teach DARE with him. Him and his partner rented out an apartment in the one of the apartment complexes where the Latin Kings were like prevalent, and he would get to know like their children or their brothers and sisters. And I remember there being a pool table and like a fridge, and they would just be like a positive influence, so that like if an emergency went down, like they were there. He spent a lot of time there, And I
I
remember
hear a safe place for people
I
to show
loved
up
it.
in a place that
Yeah,
was maybe
so
not
I mean,
always
like
safe.
I never saw, like, obviously I don't think that anybody would take their child into danger, and he would have never done that. But it was like every interaction, my dad was so kind and so genuine that I saw it wasn't like what the media makes it out to be, I guess. And this is in the 90s.
Right.
So I feel like it has significantly changed. And I want to say by the time I got in high school, this goes back to my naive comment about how I just felt so proud growing up that I felt so comfortable. I'm like, yeah, my dad's a police officer. And I remember being one of the only ones growing up whose dad was in law enforcement. I was so proud to say that. And I always got like, oh, that's so cool. And like people would ask questions. And, you know, I'm like, yeah, I got to go on a ride along. Like, I got to miss school to go on ride alongs.
Really gypped. I never had a
Okay,
ride
Jennifer really got gypped.
along.
I
This is
mean, how
multiple children.
cool
I'm
was
like,
that? Yeah.
I'm gypped. My
And
dad has
it's
a
an
police
Illinois
training.
thing. It's an Illinois thing, Jennifer.
Guess
But I mean,
so.
like, it was the time in my life. I mean, we would count down the days. We would fight, like my brothers and I would fight every, and we'd be like, you gotta go last year. I'm like, no, I didn't. Like, you know, we would fight over it. And we became close with a lot of the police officers, and it was just awesome, just absolutely awesome. And then I want to say by the time I got in high school, you know, like your friends start getting in trouble and they start doing, you know,
Because they're
questionable
kids.
things. Yeah. I truly never did anything because I was so afraid to step out of line that it was just like in my head, like, okay, you don't do drugs, you know, you don't go do this, you don't do that. So I walked a very narrow path because I didn't want to get in trouble. I didn't want to embarrass my dad. You know, I didn't want to deal with those consequences because his and my relationship was like so important to me. Like, I don't bring shame to your family. That's just how it is. And when my friends started getting in trouble, I remember like one time they would like intentionally like say things like all cops are pigs and kind of thing. And I'm like, what does that mean? Like, that just kind of took me aback. Like, they would intentionally say it loudly in front of me so that like I would hear the comment.
And would
Wanted
you
a
say that
response from
you're
you.
saying that's high school, right? Sorry,
Yeah,
go ahead.
this is like high school. So I graduated in 2007, and that's really when I feel like the shift started for me personally. I can't say, you know, that that's when it like shifted for the world, but in my life personally, like that's when everything shifted for me because I was like, okay, I was like, why are police officers called pigs? Like, I had never heard that before. I'd only ever heard positive things. And so as more and more time went on, like more and more things kept happening. And then it was almost like I was getting blamed. It felt like people would get in trouble and then they would like intentionally be like, excuse my language. They'd be like, fuck the police. And like, you know, like all this stuff. And I'm sitting here like, why? Like,
I know that I'm loving everything I'm hearing, and I know that something that I opened up about in a probably one of the first episodes was this that moment when I realized, like, whoa, things aren't so nice here.
Yes.
And I don't know about you and if you can relate or speak on this at all, but for me, like, I did personalize it pretty heavily. Like, I remember being like, whoa, you're talking about that's my dad. Like, that's my uncle. That's that's my family you're talking about. And so, can you give us a little about how you felt personally when
For
this was being
sure.
said?
I was actually very upset about it. I internalized it a lot because I felt like I was being targeted almost in a way, because a lot of these people who were saying this were people I grew up with. So people who knew my family, knew my dad, knew my uncle, like knew that my brother wanted to go in law enforcement. These were people that I've known since we were babies. And then it felt like I was personally being targeted because they knew I went on ride-alongs, you know, and they knew I was like very supportive, and maybe they knew I was naive too, but I was just, it really hurt my feelings because I was like, wow, I would never say that about your dad. You know, like I would never say disrespect somebody like that. And it was confusing too, because I know what goes into putting your vest on, lacing up your boots, getting a cup of coffee before you leave the house. I know what that's like, and I know what's going through their head. and I know what they're sacrificing every time that they walk out the door. So for me, I was just like, what the hell? Like, you have no idea.
Yes.
Like, is this the last time I'm gonna see my dad? But
Oof.
you get to say that, cops are pigs and like all this stuff. I'm like, but you don't know the emotion that goes into every time putting your gun on your holster. Hopefully I don't have to use this tonight. Bye, Caitlin. I love you. I hope I get to see you again. Like, you don't know what that's like.
And I think that that hits, obviously, that hits home for me. I did share a little bit on our social media page of a Facebook post that I had put back in the day, because that was me to a T. Like, I used to cry, especially when things started to change in this world. I would go home and I would stay up literally all night if I had to, just to see my dad walk through the door. Like, I just want to see my dad one more time. Like, I would get so anxious about it. And something that I developed, so my dissertation was all on the civil unrest and how it impacted active law enforcement officers. And one of the things that came out of that, one of my biggest findings, okay, look at everybody's getting my findings now. You got to read it, everybody. But one of my biggest findings out of this, though, was this huge theme of the impact to the family. And I'm not kidding when I say that I had officers tell me, like, their children developed, like, I had one officer, literally, it probably will never leave my brain, but her child developed seizures, and the doctors said that these seizures were brought on by the immense stress and anxiety because their parent was the front line of civil unrest. And you don't stop to think, you know what I mean? Like, I don't think a lot of people stop to think about that. And now we're in a world of social media, and these children of first responders are seeing it live, getting it at school, getting it on social media, and I can't even fathom.
Well, I appreciate actually that point too about the family, because that's really what I wanted to come back to. And Caitlin, I appreciate you sharing that. And I hate that that's, the experience. And yeah, I know that we're here because of that. In terms of how you're talking and describing what your dad was doing, and yet, and to put on that clinical hat, like how that impacts the family, right? And the reason, not to overspeak for you, but thinking about, well, I'm going to take that personal because that's an impact to this entire family unit, that it's not just a sacrifice of an individual, it's a sacrifice of a family. And I'm always going to come back to this place because I think the military has utilized and understood that and put some resources in its place. I just don't think we have that as first responder families. And so I think your ability to share that, it does just share so much light. And because it feels so isolating. I mean, Ashley, you and I really bonded over, I think, some of these conversations. And recognizing, like, oh yeah, that's what I went through alone, and there was kind of nobody else.
It's a very lonely place to be, especially when it's such a giant shift too. When it was like something to now it's just this like negative, like shameful thing that you are now a part of, I guess. And the part that really kills me, so like as a mom, you want your kids to experience like the highs that you experienced as a kid. And I always pictured growing up like, oh, if I ever have kids, I want them to be able to be like, oh yeah, my grandpa was a police officer, or my uncle is a police officer, my uncle's a firefighter, kind of thing. And ever since, I had Amelia, my oldest, in 2016. And that's really, I feel like, when things shifted in my mind where I was like, okay, we got to keep this quiet because you can't trust anybody. And you don't know how somebody's gonna react anymore to, oh yeah, my grandpa was a police officer, or oh yeah, my uncle's a police officer, kind of thing. And it's just like we got to the point where we're like, for her safety and for her mental well-being, we just told her, like, unless somebody like you trust asks you, we're like, just don't tell anybody. Because, and like that kills me because I used to be like, my dad's a police officer, and I wanted her to be like, my grandpa was a police officer, kind of thing. But she doesn't share that with pretty much anybody because we just instilled it in her, like, just don't say it anymore. Because no matter what, I feel like no matter who I tell it to this day, any association with a police officer, you're automatically deemed racist. Like, that's how I feel. And they're like, those are many experiences that I have had where it's like, well, how can you support the police if they're doing X, Y, and Z, you know, to this community of people? And then I'll always say, like, my support for the police is unwavering as long as it's justified. Like, that will never change.
Way to put
As
it.
long as I feel that the actions were justified or whatever the circumstance, I will always support them because that is my entire, like, that is my entire upbringing. Like I said, like, you support law enforcement as long as it's justified.
Yeah.
So I always get that vibe that, you know, I had a hard time. So I'm actually finishing up graduate school and I'm
Oh,
going to
that's
become a
awesome.
board certified behavior analyst.
Okay.
And our field doesn't really have any research with law enforcement. And that kills me because we have so much to offer. And my field is absolutely wonderful with, you know, like research on autism
Yeah.
and different disabilities and all that stuff.
It's an incredible
And
discipline. Yeah.
yeah, so I was like, when I was writing, when I joined the graduate program, I was like, I'm doing something with law enforcement with this. I'm changing it. I am one of the first people in our field at my school specifically that did my thesis working with law enforcement. And I did a lot of research on the different things that law enforcement are trained on. And it's mostly the topography of behavior. So what does behavior look like? Someone's walking with their hands in their pocket down the street and it's 90 degrees out and they're wearing a trench coat. Okay, what do you think that that person's doing? So that's like the topography of it. But nobody's training police officers on the functions of behavior. There's four functions of behavior: access to a tangible item, there's access to attention, social gratification, there's escape conditions, and of course I'm forgetting the fourth one. I'm just like so in it right now.
So that's the way it goes sometimes.
Yep.
Which is good.
Yeah. Yep.
Anyway, I'm just going to continue my thought. Basically, they are not trained on why behaviors happen. So if they see somebody like on a park bench, you know, rocking back and forth, screaming, they're going to be like, okay, this person needs, I need to call an ambulance, you know, but they're not going to really understand why are these behaviors happening. So they're not going to be able to generalize to the next situation. Like, let's say they encounter somebody at the grocery store screaming and pulling their hair kind of thing. They're not going to make that connection and be like, okay, so this is automatic. That was the other one, automatic. They're not going to generalize that and take what they learned from that situation about why the similar behavior is happening in a different environment. So my goal for that was to, if anything, give them more leverage when they're out working the streets and being like, okay, so somebody is stealing a water bottle because it's like 100 degrees here today. Somebody is stealing a water bottle. Why did they steal that water bottle? They had to get access to something. So they had to get access to a tangible. They had to get access to water. You know, so it's showing more of like the humane part of behavior rather than just what it looks like. You know, that's where that profiling comes in. So I was trying, I want to change that. I actually trained several police officers and I created like a whole training for them on the functions of behavior and why they happen. And then I wrote a whole paper about like civil unrest and the statistics of everything today. I was just trying to knock out these like beliefs that are there that are not true. I even talked to several police officers how they don't feel like profiling exists. Like, especially when when you're going to go pull somebody over, you can't really see someone's skin color in a car 100 feet in front of you. That car had to do something. The behavior of that person had to trigger something in you that you're like, oh, I should keep my eyes out. So I'm going to pull this car over. And then just so happens that somebody is a certain color or a certain gender, something like that. That's where that profiling comes in. And that's where they're like, we aren't profiling people, you know? So it's just, it's interesting to hear. Sorry, that was like a whole tangent.
You're okay. No, thank you for sharing.
Yeah.
Jennifer, did you want to add to that?
Appreciate it. It sounds like kind of bridging your experience and taking that into how to educate people in their field that's a little bit different. I keep coming back to this point. It kind of started in our first episode with Ashley and her dissertation, but it really sounds like a first responder's kid will take an experience and like go with it much further. I don't think that we are usually brought down by situations. Like we take from it and say, okay, I'll make something positive out of this.
We sure do try to figure it out, don't we?
Yeah, because there was no sense made of it growing up. It was just kind of like, okay, this is the situation, or you're kind of just left to your own devices to figure it out as a kid. And it's confusing, especially like, again, as you're getting older and then it's shifting to a negative experience. It's so confusing because you're like, what just happened?
Right.
Because in my eyes, their profession is so noble that I can't imagine. I guess I should preface it with this. So my younger brother went into the military before he became a paramedic firefighter.
Wow.
And I remember he was 19 and he went straight into the Navy. And we were always so close growing up, my brothers and I. And I felt the same pride that he went into the military that I do for my brother, who's a police officer. So like that, still to this day, I cannot make the distinction of like keyboard warriors and like all this stuff, how they just know that the way that things are. And it's like, if you had to sit through and watch the news and you haven't heard from your loved one in 3 months, wondering if they're alive or dead overseas. And like, if you had to sit there and wait, like if you had to see my mom crying every night, waiting to hear from her son, and the way that she still does that with my brother, because as a police officer, I mean, you don't know. He's been in such horrible situations. He's gotten hurt in the line of duty. I mean, he was on the SWAT team. He saw so many horrible things, many horrible situations, all back to back to back. And it didn't just affect him and his family. It's affected our whole family. So to me, like that pride is still the same, whether it be a soldier or a police officer, a firefighter, whatever, that nobility, like the importance of that position, I know I could never do it. So the fact that somebody else is okay with, you know, risking their life and giving up everything at the drop of a hat to help somebody is beyond me. Like I can't make that make sense in my head, how people just sit behind a keyboard, like I was saying, or, you know, on the news media kind of thing. They make this out to be such a horrible, horrible profession to be in. Or like, you chose this, like you chose to this kind of profession, you chose to risk your life kind of thing. No, that's not what they did. They chose to help people. And that's the distinction that drives me insane, because nobody wants to talk about that piece. It's always like, you chose this profession, you chose to put your family through that. And that's couldn't be farther from the truth.
That's true.
Especially when you like really understand it as a calling, and to be to service to others is such a unique thing, you know, whether it's a, you know, a service member, a firefighter, a police officer, it really is a service to others. And that doesn't usually leave us in a lot of good places at times, because humans are difficult.
That was so nice.
That too. coming out of my degree as a behaviorist now, and like seeing why things are the way that they are, it drives me insane, because we're only furthering this belief, you know, that nobody needs to be held accountable anymore. And it drives me nuts, because I'm sitting here like, we wonder why the world is the way that it is. We wonder why that there's school shootings. We wonder why you can't go to the grocery store without, me personally, my head's a swivel. We wonder why the world is the way that it is, when we have taken away that accountability piece and we've taken away those soft social skills. I don't even have to have a we don't have to do this right now. I could just type everything I want to say to you.
Can you explain what a soft social skill is, just for people that maybe we don't know?
Yeah. So like, I don't have to make eye contact with you. I don't have to say hello to you. I don't have to do any of that anymore. I could just look at my phone and, you know, I could just turn my back, and it's acceptable. It's acceptable to do that now. And that blows my mind, because I mean, I'll be walking my dogs in my neighborhood and I'll say hi to everybody. And then I've had like responses now where it's just like people ignore you, or they're like, they flat out say, like, now is not the time to say hi. And I think I'm just like, wow, that's just like a human nicety to like just to look somebody in the eye, talk to them. I mean, I've worked with students before who would come into the classroom, immediately sit right at their desk, and wouldn't even say good morning, wouldn't say hi to you, wouldn't, the door would slam right on the person next, but behind them. And I was like, I'm like, good morning. And then again, no response. Good morning. Like, until you respond and have a conversation and look me in the face, like, we are losing those skills. And it's so disheartening because I worry for the future. I worry for the future of my kids, you know, and I want them to continue to be kind and to hold the door for the person behind them and all that stuff. So,
Well,
and
and
yeah.
sorry, my thought process here a little bit too is kind of connect. I'm kind of connecting the dots from when we first started actually talking today to now. Like, so how much of that though? I do think it's a new way of just parenting in general has changed a lot, right? And then I wonder how much of that is the way we were raised, right? And then how much of that falls back on. You know, like first responding and stuff like that, or maybe generational things. I don't know the exact answer, but what I know is that it goes back to like respect being the baseline of what it's like to be raised by a first responder. At least that's what it was for me. That's what it will always be for me. And so then, yes, I feel the exact same way, but then I'm always torn on what is that because of the way we were raised and who we were raised by? And of course, I do think as a child of a first responder, we feed into the more strict kind of parenting roles that we had. But one thing that you mentioned that I'm interested in a little bit here too, and I'm interested in it because I married somebody who, thank God for him, shout out, he's our producer. He's all the best
Oh,
here. So
he is
hold
why
on
you're
here. Thank God
here.
for Danny Geffner, everybody. But he didn't have any experience with a first responder. Right. So he's complete opposite world than I am with this. And I wouldn't say that he's disrespectful by any means. I mean, he's still a respectful human and his parents taught him that. But are there differences in the way that him and I would probably parent and probably see things? Absolutely. Right. So like, do you see any of that with your husband now? Because you're so enmeshed, like just like me, I have uncles, you know, everybody, but you're so enmeshed in it. Like, how has that been different for you now marrying someone who's outside of that, of this world?
Yeah, so that's a really good question. Fortunately, like my husband's dad, my father-in-law used to, he's from Louisiana. So he used to work in the prisons, but he would ride on horseback and he was like a prison guard on horseback. My husband's family is very sometimes Southern. I'm just going to say it like Southern traditional views, you know, so you respect law enforcement or you get the back of a hand, you know. So
Okay.
that's kind of how he was raised. His dad did that before he was born. So I don't think he ever experienced it firsthand. But I try and share these experiences with him and stuff, and he's just like, okay, it sounds cool. But I'm like, you're not as excited. Like, why aren't you so
Yes.
excited? You know? Like, I gotta go on ride-alongs.
Right,
Like, is that exciting
exactly.
for you?
Well, and for me, it's been a big, for him, it's been a big transition, I think, for us in general, of like, we are tough love through and through. Like, if my dad is not making fun of you and like giving you a really, really hard time, then he doesn't like you, you know? And so, like, my husband at first was like, whoa, like, he is a giant, scary man. And I don't know what to think of this. And I'm like, he's just messing around, you know? I'm like, this is a good sign. Like, this is normal. Now we've been together almost 10 years, so now they give it back to each other. But like, you know, it's things like that that I'm so used to that.
Yeah, that's just
And again,
it.
you know, like Jennifer, I'm
Helpful.
sure you can agree, right? Like, you're so used to that behavior that you don't see it differently. But then when you start to talk to people who didn't grow up this way, you're like, oh,
Yeah,
you
girl.
don't say, oh, you don't
So
things.
I'd love to get both of your guys' feedback on this a little bit. Just, you know, again, Caitlin, you've shared so much. I was an adult and again had a friend who had just married a law enforcement officer, And I happened to be hanging out with her, and it was like a group outing, and there were some other people there. And I think one of the other women there, she had just got a speeding ticket. And she, of course, was complaining about that. And my friend, I mean, she became very defensive and, kind of like,
It was uncomfortable.
and kind of came for the girl a little bit. And, I just didn't say anything. And later, my friend kind of talked to me and she was just like, doesn't that drive you crazy? And stuff like that. And I mean, I don't love it, but I've also like, that's been an experience for me for such a long time. I don't want to say that it was kind of like water off a duck's back, but like I just don't take those things personal. And there's been, a multitude. And again, a speeding ticket conversation is very different maybe than some other things we've talked about. But I don't know. I was thinking about that and kind of, I think, self-analyzing myself a little bit of like, oh, was there something wrong with me? Like,
I do think it
No, I
varies, right? Like, I don't know, Kaylin, if you agree. I feel like it does vary on topics because I've had that happen before too, where someone just says something next to me, either about a speeding ticket or like just something stupid, like, oh, that I don't know, anything. Like they seen a video or they got in trouble for something else that really is minuscule, but it's the end of their world and I get it, and then they say something mad about the mad, bad, I should say, about the police, and you're like, there's sometimes where I am just able to be like, okay, well, like in my head, I'm usually like, okay, well, you're mad because you did something wrong. Like
exactly.
I'm able to be like, well,
You
that,
don't get caught.
yeah, exactly. Like,
Exactly.
no cop, no stop type thing. You got
Yeah.
stopped. I don't know what you want me to say. Like, I am able to like, I sometimes laugh at that stuff. That's probably wrong of me, but sometimes I do have to giggle because I'm like, I mean, most of the time, yeah, okay, like. Say what you
Yeah.
gotta say, do what you gotta do. I think for me, it's just when I hear those like bigger statements, like all cops are murderers or
Yes.
things like that, that I can't, like my insides get like, ugh.
That's when I can't keep quiet. I try to keep quiet. Like if it's a speeding ticket situation, fine. But at the same time, I like there's just something inside of me that always has to like point out, but you were speeding though. You know what I mean? Like, but what were you doing that caused you to get noticed by the police in the first place? So it's like that goes back to my accountability pet peeve with people is like they weren't doing anything wrong. The police just, happened upon you and just decided to give you a ticket, kind of thing.
I will say really fast though, like, because I've been talking a lot more without my clinician's hat on today than I usually do, and putting that back on for one second here for sure is that like there is beauty though in what I have learned to like learn from other people. And to understand their perspectives on it and to have the open dialogue and to because my view isn't always correct, right? Or my thought process and I do love to be able to have those open lines of communication and talk. And what I find is most of
Well,
the time when I'm able to do that, we find such common ground. And it's as simple as talking.
Well, and I will say this too, and I definitely know I'm the odd man out here, but I think in that whole breath about having, conversations, and it's important, in us having these conversations. I will say, and having a clinical hat, some of my experiences professionally were in places where unfortunately people and a lot of times children had really bad experiences where the police were there. And I didn't have any control over that, especially children, they don't have control over that. And so, I really professionally drew a pretty strong line about not letting clients don't really need to know that much about my personal life anyways. We're not here to talk about me, when we show up to therapy, it's about, what's going on for you. But I definitely had a lot of awareness about that and that people do have bad experiences or, the police show up on the worst day of their lives. And so, just some of that kind of confrontation. And I also, want to point out as well, even with the speeding ticket piece, humans don't love accountability because the feelings that that brings up with them, right? Their shame, judgment, all that stuff. So it's much easier to
project.
blame this uniform, because that's truly,
Yeah.
you don't know anything about that human being, right? Because that's a whole different conversation if we know a human being. And so I think that those are some of the things that we can get patterns in. And so I didn't have a lot of, like, that wasn't a hard choice for me. But I guess it was because I'm putting on this professional hat and because of what my profession is. Like, if I worked in marketing, like your husband, I might have paraphernalia all around that said, or a t-shirt that said, kid of a cop and stuff. But so I think it, probably my experience is a little bit different because of that.
Well, and I think too, like, and that's the way I think this podcast is hard for that reason, right? Because my heart and my passion is like really wanting this for children of first responders. So I always play two separate roles. I think Jennifer, you do too, right? Like on here of I want to speak as a child of a first responder, then I have my clinical hat. My clinical hat is going to be completely different, to be honest, than I shouldn't say completely different, but like different than my viewpoints as a child of a first responder. And I've had to do a lot of work with that, and like not I have had to separate that and do that my own work of like I want to learn from people no matter what they believe and work with them, and I think that that's also a beautiful thing about the careers that we have that allow us to do those things and to understand. I do look at a lot, and this is going down a rabbit hole that we are not going down today. But I do look at a lot of things system wise,
Yeah, I
right?
appreciate
So
you bringing that
like,
up with your master's in social work. I'm no system expert, but I know
yeah,
somebody
so
who
my
is.
whole my dissertation, I really included that systems piece, and I don't ever turn my head to that there is a lot of things that we need to fix within a lot of
Oh,
systems.
yeah.
And I will never turn my head to that. So,
That I think sometimes sadly are unjust, and certainly to your initial point about justice being important. And man, it's a bummer when we see those things that are unjust to different populations and things like that. So
Yeah,
I appreciate you bringing that up too, Ashley.
we definitely need to like validate, somebody's experience and understand where they're coming from. So like professionally, like when I'm working, I will 1000% do that. But like when I'm like out with somebody, and then they're just like berating like law enforcement, that's when like that switch goes off on me. I'm like, okay, you said what you need to say, now you can listen to what I need to say.
I love that you said it like that because that's where my brain has been. I'm like, yes, like I could, like in my zone of a therapist, I can do that. I will do that 100%. I will
1000%.
validate people. I will, in my zone of like a child of a first responder human outside of my office, like sometimes I struggle.
And I really do struggle with that. I'm never not going to be kind or come off like abrasive about it. I do want to hear what you have to say, but when it comes down to what I always feel like when it comes down to what I have to say, there a lot of people aren't responsive. Like their view is correct. Like their experience, their beliefs on law enforcement, nothing I say is going to change that. And it's hard for me because I'm like, if you could just see, what goes into being a first responder, like if I tell people all the time, like if you want to see how it really is, sign up to go for a ride along. Go talk to police officers. Go, I mean, they love to talk to the community. They love to shed light on what they're doing. A lot of them are trying to be more pro community, like opening the doors
Oh,
and like
that's
welcoming
fun.
people in. I'm my daughter's Girl Scout troop leader. I work really closely with our police department, and they've become some like really, really good contacts, and they're really nice people, and we enjoy seeing them. They want to work with the community to kind of be more transparent.
Transparency
So
is a big one.
when I have these conversations with people, I'm like, okay, but have you ever sat down? Like, have you ever taken the time to sit down with somebody and like listen to what it's like or imagine the experience of the person? There are officers who are bad. Like there are. They're always going to slip through the cracks. That's never going to go away. But 99% of the officers out there genuinely want to help. So it's like when you can't take the time to put yourself in someone else's shoes, and I feel like again, that's where we're failing as a society. Everyone is always right. Like their view is right. my view is right, your view is right. You know, nobody wants to take the time to sit back and be like, okay, wait a second. Maybe what you do have to say really could change my viewpoint on something. You know, so it's really hard for me to sit there when I'm not being a professional and being like, okay, well, did you take the time to talk to somebody? Or if like you had these experiences, did you go and talk to the police department before you posted a complaint on Facebook? Did you take measures to correct the situation or to learn more about why these protocols are in place or what the laws are, kind of thing? And I know nobody has a lot of time, but if something's really bothering you to the extent that you need to make like a Facebook post about it, or, you know, generalize like all officers are murderers, whatever, racist, you know, that kind of thing, my response is always, did you take the time to do research of your own? Did you take the time to get to know an officer, ask these questions? And that 99, there, no, not even 99, 100% of the time, the answer is no, I have not taken the time to do that. So it's like, that's where what gets frustrating for me.
Well, and to come back, I think, I don't know how you felt, Caitlin, and this is totally me being a therapist right now, but I think to have a place to talk about this and to say, this is your experience, and I don't think that you're completely alone in that experience. I hope that's helpful, you know, that as kids of first responders, and I say kids, like I'm an adult now, but yeah, I mean, there were people complaining when you're young, and how do you have the things to kind of filter and understand?
Right.
And then we talk about, you know, the complexity of a culture today where there's so much information. I'm kind of glad I'm old,
I
you
know.
know? So,
I know. Well,
yeah.
So I do, like, I agree with what you're saying, because that's the point of this, right? Is like that safe space. It was obviously my personal experience mixed with my dissertation and getting all this information from that made me realize, like, we as first responder children don't have a platform to put any of this, right? And
well,
then clinically my brain was like, and that's not okay. Like, that's not okay. We all need a safe space to be able to do something like that and to relate.
Well, and Caitlin, I think you opened us up today with even saying, like, my dad did this, my dad did that, and yet it impacted my entire family. And that's a system, right, Ashley? Right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, families are systems. And again, it's a service, it's a duty. And so, you know, seeing that sacrifice and its impact, and knowing, like, hey, there's not been a place for people that are first responders, kids, to kind of talk about, because those aren't necessarily choices we made.
Right.
You know? So, and yet there's still that impact. So, Caitlin, I thank you for that, for being so open and sharing. And I also hate, you know, that you've had to have these encounters
Well, it's
repeatedly.
Like really nice to have like now a community being built on this, because like I said, growing up, it's just kind of like this is just how it is. You just kind of roll with the punches. And then now as like an adult and as a mom, it's kind of, the world is changing and it's always going to be changing.
Right.
It's just hard when your experience is so, it's kind of rare, like to know people, to know so many people that have, you know, grown up with like law enforcement, especially, or any kind of first responder. It's hard to come across these kinds of people, because most of the time, like, our experiences are going to be similar. And I thank God that I had two brothers growing up who were like experiencing the same things that like we were, that I feel like that bonded us a lot, because we kind of went through it. Like, yes, my dad was, you know, on the front line, you know, pulling dead bodies out of cars, kind of thing, or, you know, in a gang shooting, in a riot, whatever the situation was. But that still was brought home in some way or another. Whether it be, you know, he was quiet or just like that. My dad always says, because I always ask this question, I'm like, how do you just, you know, like you just saw a dead body, like, how do you process that information? Like, I can't make sense of it. And he's always been so good about saying, you know, like, this is work, you know, that this is home. So he's always able to like compartmentalize it. But I'm just sitting here like, how, it still was brought home in one way or another, whether,
Right.
you know, it was intentional or not. Like, it still affected
Oh, of
all
course. Yeah, you
of us.
can't walk away with something like that with there not being a little bit of dust on you, right? Even when you're trying to shake so much of it off.
And like, we always loved hearing the stories. It's still to this day, like, I still love hearing stories, and whether they're good or bad, it's just amazing to me, like, some of the calls that they get. Somebody wants to hear these stories or they don't. The trauma, it's like a secondary trauma. Like, you're still processing, like, that was my dad who saw this, or that's my brother who went through this. Still trickles down no matter what.
Well, I
Absolutely.
hear that so much love that you have for your dad and your siblings. And we do survive childhood with siblings, that's for sure.
We do. It definitely brought us closer together growing up, because we just all, like, we knew the situation. Like, it was just kind of like, we just had to stick together. And then, you know, this really shaped my brother going into law enforcement. And I mean, he's just moving up the ranks so quick. And, you know, he's been on these horrific calls and all this stuff, but he's also been on, like, good positive experiences
Yeah, of
too. And
course.
it's a lot. So, and it's hard to see. And even my younger brother now is like a firefighter, paramedic, even in being a soldier. Like, you see the shift in them. Like, it's, you can just see, like, that they've been through stuff, that they're trying to process stuff.
Is that a pretty hard awareness that you see, like a shift or a change, kind of?
Yeah, I want to say it's like, you still try and be there for them as much as you can. And, you know, they have their own families now, and, like, their spouses and stuff. But there's always just this connection that you have with your siblings that you just know. Just some of the stuff that they have gone through, I can see it. I don't know how to explain it. It's just the wear and tear, and, like, the mental aspect of it. You could just kind of see a shift. It's hard to watch, but I mean,
Of
like, they're still
course.
the same people that
Of course. Of
love, but they're
course.
still, like, you know, that, you know, they've been through it. And it's kind of hard to watch that, just to know, like, somebody hurt my brother. Like, that's my brother. Like, it kills me to know that somebody hurt him, or that there's certain call that, like, my brother's had to see, or, you know, something like that. Like, it's hard to put your head around that. What
Absolutely.
other profession are you getting hurt like that?
Absolutely.
So it's
I
hard
think
to.
the thing of that is that, I don't know that we'll ever get our heads around those kind of situations. And so that's the hardest part of it for sure. And again, I think it's so beautiful how much you love and care for your brothers. As being a sister, it's kind of a nurturing role in its own way. So yeah, you're kind of your baby brother, you're seeing him kind of grow up and like, wait, what happened?
So, and we're all still pretty close to this day, and it's just, I'm their biggest fan, whether they like it or not, you
Well,
know. I
it
love
also
them.
sounds like that protective sister too, and why, like, I will say something, I will kind of point out when you feel like that there's maybe somebody's saying stuff that you don't agree with.
It's like, it's hurtful in a way. And, like, too, like, Ashley, I know your parents got divorced too, but, like, that also bonded us, because, like, we were so young when my parents divorced, that that kind of, like, we just kind of stayed close growing up. And, like, we would see our dad every Sunday. We would go do fun things, and we would go hiking or anything like that. And we'd always be like, oh, what happened to you this week, or what calls, kind of thing. And even when my dad was working, like, working nights, I remember, like, pagers back in, like, the 90s. I remember, like, my dad, we would page my dad, and he would always immediately get a phone to call us, so that we knew, like, he was okay, or if, like, there was a problem, like, or we had a question, or we just wanted to hear his voice. Like, he would immediately, like, respond to us. So that was always comfort, because we wouldn't see him every day. It would be Sundays we would see him, but he was always in contact with us, and he always, like, made sure that we knew he was okay. So that was very important growing up. But that truly, like, bonded my brothers and I. Be like, oh, don't worry, I talked to dad, he's okay. Like, it was just, like,
I
that
love
kind of
that.
thing. That was the trajectory pretty much of our whole childhood. And it didn't just affect my life and my career, it affected both of their careers, it affected my uncle's career, and all that stuff. So it's very near and dear to my heart.
Well, and I, yes, and I mean, this has been really incredible, and I can't thank you enough for like
Okay.
opening up and talking with us and giving us
Yes.
in-depth information. I almost feel like we needed an episode like this to kind of rip off some of the Band-Aid
Yeah.
harder
Yes.
discussions, and I really appreciate you being so open and
Of course.
vulnerable to do so. And one thing though that Jennifer and I really love to do those before we end, we like to get a funny story.
Oh,
So
yeah.
if there is anything that you do have funny story-wise, please share with us so that we can share that with everybody else.
Oh my gosh. Well, I'm going to tell you about one of my dad's calls that sticks with me to this day. So he told me, I think I had to be about, I don't know, 10 years old, but there was this like pet cemetery in Hanover Park, and I think it's still there.
Still there.
And there, my dad said it was like a dark and stormy night. It was like thundering. It was like October, like totally Halloween. And he was working nights. Well, he kept getting these calls about a man wearing a trench coat that was jumping out into traffic, and he was naked under the trench coat, and he was like opening his trench coat.
Yikes.
He would jump into the pet cemetery. So my dad was by himself, and he had to go, you know, like I think this guy did it like 3 or 4 times. And of course, my dad pulls up in the cemetery and everything. I just remember like laughing so hard. I remember him like explaining how his like flashlight was like shaking because he was so scared. Because, you know, it was like a pure like Halloween, out of
He
Halloween
said,
kind of
this is like the Michael Myers movie
thing.
that I'm
Yeah.
involved in right now.
I can't remember. I don't think they found him. I can't remember. But that's like one of the stories that always sticks out with me is just like the detail that I went into about like how his like flashlight was like shaking and you know, just that this man was jumping out in front of cars naked, like and then on a while it's thundering.
It always cracks me up to hear them like have those moments and hear stories from our dads. My dad's petrified. He's gonna kill me. My dad's petrified of bats, like petrified of bats. And his department sent him on purpose to a bat in the house call. And like listening to my dad, like he literally said he walked in and the lady was like, "You have to get it." And he was like, "You have to get it." You know, like listening to him be like, he was just as scared as the woman
Yes.
was, and they both tried to get this bat out of our house,
Yes.
but.
And that brings me back to like even to this day. So my brothers both work for the same department, so half of it's fire, half of it's police, but like the fire and police banter between the two is just
I can't imagine.
unbelievable. I just sit there and I'm just like laughing so hard because I'm like, what? Like what does that mean? Like they just make fun of each other like you wouldn't believe.
To be honest, I kind of love it because even
I
I work
love
with all first responders, and so sometimes I'll like take the little pin out of the grenade and hand it over. Like
Yeah.
we're very blessed at our at my office. Sometimes people love to bring in gifts, right? Like donuts for like
Yeah.
everybody or whatever. I had a firefighter bring in like these like specialty donuts. And so then one of my police officers came in and he will sometimes bring in Dunkin', but I was like, "Oh, I'm sorry. Like, did you not see that the firefighters have taken care of us today? Like, but look what they actually gave us. Like, not just Dunkin', you know, like I."
The
And then it
good
was like,
stuff.
"Oh, no, you didn't." And I was like,
Oh my,
"I had to do
I
it. I had
know,
to
just
do
some of the
it."
jokes that they say, I'm like, oh my God. Oh, it's just incredible. I love it. It
I
brings
love
some
it too. And
joy.
that's the fun part about being
Yeah.
a child of a first responder,
Yes.
understanding all that and hearing these things and their
Yeah.
stories and getting the humor and
Yeah.
you know being a part of it for
Yeah.
sure. But
And we love our firefighters here
we
at When the
love
Call Hits
our
Home.
firefighters. Yeah.
Since
Yeah.
we're just
Absolutely do. Yeah, my older brother's always like, oh yeah, everybody loves a firefighter, you know. Thing. So it's just so funny. I love it.
It is. Well, Caitlin, thank you so much for coming on
Yes, Caitlin.
today.
Thank you. Especially being in graduate school, the fact that
Oh,
you had any
yes.
time,
Oh,
like
for
all
real.
year. Yeah.
I'm graduating in December, so
Yes. You got to come back on and
congratulations.
tell us all
I would
about it.
love to. Yes, I would love
Tell
to.
us
All
come on and
that.
educate us some more about
Yes.
ABA and
So much.
yeah, I'm trying to pioneer a path for more behavioral trainings and all that stuff, with offering more experienced officers in our field. So hopefully
We
And
have
I'm
the
going to be
bomb.
honest, I think that's the point, right? We can sit here all day and talk about things, but we all have to put it into action at
Yes.
some point too and figure it
Absolutely.
out.
Okay, Ashley, take us to church. All right. That is the truth, though, for sure. So, if anybody's listening and is interested in Caitlin's program, reach out.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, Caitlin, we'll talk to you later.
Right.
Thank you so
Thanks
much for
so
coming on
much.
today.
It was a
All
pleasure.
right. Bye.
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 Caitlin, again, thank you so much for your time and sharing those experiences and for what your dad did for the community and your brothers for what they do and serve now. And again, sharing kind of that impact and your own sacrifice as a kid of a first responder. So again, thank you so much for your time.
And we do have to thank her one more time, Caitlin, again, for just being willing, even a year ago, to open up to me and to help kind of put us on our path to developing this podcast and trying to create a community for children of first responders. So we are so thankful for Caitlin and her time. And of course, we all want you to remember that when the call hits home, Jennifer and I are always here for you. Thank you.